He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising back there doing all the hard work. We are live in Hoover, Alabama at SEC Media Days, getting you all of the information. It's been a stacked, amazing day. Again, if you don't have the Game Nashville app, go get the Game Nashville app, because if you missed any of this, we tweeted out the link. We've already had Derek Mason. We've already had Oren Burks and Ralph Webb of Vandy Football here, in addition to Pat Dooley. We got Paul Feinbaum coming up in a few minutes. It's a stacked, huge addition, and we wanted to bring on one of the best minds in the SEC.
As he laughs.
He does laugh at that. But somebody that we respect a lot that can maybe give us a little perspective, because today so far, I'm not sure that we can wrap our heads around the same thing. So Mike Huguenin from Gridiron now joining us to talk all things SEC. Thanks for the time, man.
And let's ask you then, because obviously everyone in the world, I'm getting text messages from buddies in Knoxville saying, I can't believe Butch did it again. He didn't admit it was just, if you only listen to the first seven words, then he did it again. If you listen to the whole answer, we could have a totally different discussion. How did you take his answer to that question, and how did you evaluate his performance, if you will, yesterday?
Not surprising. That's who Butch Jones is. He's a coach speak guy. He's a cliche guy. He's not going to say anything remotely controversial that he thinks is controversial. I think the key is that others look at him and go, the guy's a boob.
Which has been true. Which has been true for a while.
I should say that. I don't want to. He's a boob in how he handles himself in the public. I think that's the problem. He's unquestionably made the team better. This will be his best offensive line he's had since he's been there. The talent accumulation has been tremendous, frankly. But his public persona, he's not looked at favorably, I don't think, by people outside of the ardent Tennessee fan base, because he looks like. This guy's he's a PE teacher, you know, with a burr cut. I'm not taking anything he says seriously.
Is there a moment where he realizes that, or is he just indifferent to the entire process?
I think that's who he is, so he's fine with that. I think he's the same guy he was at Cincy in Central Michigan. He was successful there. He's been successful relatively at Tennessee. I don't think he's going to change. My assumption is he has been told, you know, coach, you're not coming across well. And I think he probably says, I don't really care.
Mike, I look at this roster, and I see a roster that is on par with Georgia and Florida. Maybe not in the right positions, but I see a roster that's on par with Georgia and Florida. Tell me why people think that this team is worse than South Carolina, is worse than Kentucky, is going to finish fifth.
Yeah, I don't think it'll finish fifth. I think that the question about the quarterbacks is obviously front and center. John Kelly, I think, is a really good running back. Who's his backup? Who's the number two receiver behind Juan Jennings? The offensive line, talent-wise, is the best since he's been there. Will he actually show it on the field? How good's Trey Smith going to be right away? Defensively, who scares you as a pass rusher? You got to have a pass rusher. They don't have one. The defensive tackles, their defensive tackles are a lot like George's edge rushers to me. I keep hearing Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy, they're great. I keep hearing Khalil McKenzie, Shai Tuttle. These guys are great.
Shai Tuttle is pretty darn good. McKenzie needs to prove it.
Tuttle, I think, is a competent SEC defensive tackle. I don't think they have not shown they have star power at defensive tackle. The linebackers outside of Kirkland, I think, are questionable. And the secondary, I think Shaq Wiggins' addition helps. The secondary, I think, it can be okay. But I do wonder about the defensive line. I'm not a Congbo.
It's health, though. Like, if they're all healthy, they're going to be fine.
But they haven't been healthy. And Congbo, for a guy who came in with so much acclaim and so much self-promotion, he certainly didn't play very well last year, and I'm not convinced he's going to be a great defensive end either.
You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are talking to Mike Huguenin from Gridiron now. So last year, to me, it's pretty clear that Tennessee was a more talented team than they are this year. They didn't live up to that. So why this year will they suddenly live up to the talent that's on their roster?
I think one positive is that every other team in the division, once again, is flawed, perhaps fatally. There's less pressure on Tennessee this year. I think the pressure got to the Vols last year. I think it especially got to the coaching staff. I think this year, though, they're going in. There's no target on their back. I think they'll be predicted to finish third in the division. And maybe they're looser this year. And they have some guys who can make plays. And, again, it goes back. If Dormady or Guarantano sort of exceeds expectations, this team could win the division. I mean, again, Florida or Georgia is going to be picked. Those teams have a lot of concerns. I think Georgia's offense, for instance, outside of Chubb and Michelle, their offensive line, come on. And what cornerback in the SEC looks at Georgia's receivers and goes, oh, my God, I'm going to get torched? There's nobody on Georgia's roster that scares you as a wide receiver.
I think, and I've had this, we've had this conversation for like 2 weeks now, it feels like. Should everybody in the SEC like just accept 9-3 until Nick Saban retires and just be like, that's really what we're all going to be until that guy leaves?
It's funny, the last two nights, in people you talk with from around the conference, it's almost like it's a given. Well, everybody knows Alabama's going to win. Everybody. There's no question. The question is, who's going to finish second in the West, and who is Alabama going to beat in the SEC championship game? I think Auburn can be a 10 or 11 win team. I don't think there's a 10 or 11 win team in the East. And frankly, I think Auburn is the only other team in the league that has a chance to win double-digit games. In some respects, yeah. We're going to accept our beatings until Nick Saban leaves.
Mike Hugenin from Gridiron now joining us. You mentioned some of the fatal flaws in the East. And yesterday when we talked to Darinoka, he made the point that if those flaws expose themselves, that there's a chance in his mind the SEC could end up being the third best conference in college football this year. When you think about that, what does that mean to the SEC particularly? Because there's so much SEC pride. What does that mean to the conference?
I think the key, talent-wise, the SEC is the best, as it proves every year in the draft. Coaching is where the SEC falls short, and quarterback play has been a huge issue. I don't think quarterback play will be an issue this year. That said, you're right, if there's a lot of 9-3, 8-4, 7-5 teams, the perception is going to be this league is down again. On paper, I still think the SEC is going to be 1 or 2 at worst, just because of the sheer talent. But you're right, the public perception that they have some key games early in the season, most notably Florida State, Alabama, and Auburn, Clemson, to prove that we're back at the top. And if you're an SEC fan, even if you hate Alabama and Auburn, you want Alabama and Auburn to win those games.
You mentioned the coaching problem, so I ask you, how do you fix it? Do you fix it by letting these guys develop, or do you fix it by dipping back into the well and looking for new talent?
That's the interesting question. I think we'll find out more about Kirby Smart this year. We'll find out more about McElwain this year. We'll find out more about Butch Jones this year. Vanderbilt is, I think Derek Mason's a good coach. He's never going to be ultra successful because it's Vanderbilt. And I know people are saying, well, James, look what James Franklin did. Well, those years, Florida was horrible and Tennessee was horrible. So he took advantage. I'm not a Will Muschamp fan, not a Mark Stoops fan. You're right. Some of these programs I don't think can get better, especially in the East with the coaches they have on hand. Quarterback play this year I think will be markedly better, and that will be a big positive. And that we'll see if these coaches can get all they can from the quarterbacks.
Last one, just to sort of follow up on the SEC thing, and I think Fitz is accurate when he says there's a conversation about the SEC being down, and then there's a conversation about how it compares to the other leagues, and that's all. Those are different conversations. But I think college football is down. I think the consolidation of power has taken place, and we've got Tuscaloosa, Columbus, Tallahassee. Maybe you throw in Ann Arbor, maybe Clemson. Otherwise, everybody else is pretty average, and everyone seems like they're Auburn in the Sugar Bowl at 8-4. Like I think that's happening to college football across the board. I don't know what to explain it to other than maybe great coaches in a couple of places, but it feels like that to me when USC finishes 9-3 and finishes third in the AP poll.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think some website did a thing about there's only 15 teams that can win the national title this year. I think it's more like 8 or 9.
I think it's 3, maybe 2.
Okay, so you're right. In some respects, I think to an extent college football's always had the haves and have-nots, but it seems in some respects that the haves in certain leagues are lapping the field. And I think that should be a concern if you're in the every league, frankly. Because, again, it goes back to, like you said about Alabama, I think every team in the SEC secretly deep down goes, we ain't beating these guys. And that's a bad, bad thing.
Fantastic stuff, Mike Hugenin and Gridiron Now. We appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Hughes.
We'll look at this. I mean, because the quote yesterday, most of you heard, Booger McFarland, he had harsh words. The question is, was he right or was Braden right? We'll look at it. Are the Vols going to be abysmal or are they going to win the East? We'll look at that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising back at the studio. And I think for the next day and a half, I'm just going to tease coming up next sports because you never know.
Coming up next, we have no idea.
Coming up next, football. So sometimes the glory of us, and if you're just tuning in.
The glory of us, wow.
The glory of this show. Ooh. Is that we are down at SEC Media Days, thanks to Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and Walker Chevrolet. And sometimes the best part about that is you never know who's going to walk by. So here we are, we're chit-chatting, we're getting ready for the next segment, and we're prepping. Paul Feinbaum going to join us in a couple minutes, and then we look up and we see, bam, Scott Ramsey walking by, President CEO of the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. So first and foremost, thanks for taking a second while you're here, you know, trying to do work. Coming on with us. So I want to ask you a difficult question. And, you know, we've talked before. My first time getting to meet you face-to-face. You're much larger than I am. So I'm just going to start with a real difficult question. But here's been our conversation because, you know, there's a table between us, so we can't beat me up. Now, our conversation today has been, is the SEC down? So I want to ask you, as somebody that has a hand in a bowl game, how concerned is the bowl community when they look at it and have to answer that question, or is it just looked as cyclical in the way it rolls?
Cyclical. Not at all concerned. I think you look at the historical kind of data from the SEC. You know, this is our 20th anniversary bowl game, and, you know, you've seen a little spike up and spike down, and certainly, you know, in their run of, what, 7 or 8 national championships in a row, you know, they were a king of the mountain, and then suddenly, you know, have a little bit of a mediocre year by national standards, and the sky's falling, and I'm not really kind of buying into that. I think when you look at from a bowl perspective, especially in Nashville, to have a game with the SEC is primary for us. I mean, when you start thinking about the marketing aspect of it, the tourism aspect, the ability to fill seats, to turn on television ratings, and all those kind of things, you know, the brands speak higher than, okay, 1 year where they only had, you know, 3 or 4 teams, you know, 10 wins, I mean, you know, kind of thing.
And the quality of the team, I mean, you guys, as the Music City Bowl, have gotten sort of slowly, the trajectory is getting a little higher and a little higher in the pecking order every year. And, you know, you're going to get the 4th or 5th best team in the SEC is going to be a great draw. I mean, that's the 3rd best team is going to be a great draw. The 7th best team is going to be a great draw. So it's almost not as important as, hey, are these elite level teams? Or are these just passionate fans? Good football teams. They're going to put on a good show,
and we're a good destination,
and you're a great destination. Yeah.
So I mean to build on that point, I mean we talked before we got on here a little bit, kind of what's your job down here, and anytime you can kind of sit down with the decision makers by conference, or in this case ESPN's here as well, and start thinking about the future. If we rewind 3 or 4 years ago, the change in the selection process with the infusion of the CFP model caused everybody to sit down and reevaluate how bowls were put together. And from my perspective in Nashville, and certainly it kind of took on a little bit because we had some other cities kind of support it, was we're not so concerned about an 8-4 or 7-5. We're worried about the matchup that plays the best in our city in that year. Okay, because at that point it doesn't really matter. I mean, you're talking about Tennessee, Nebraska. We weren't talking about 8-4. Oh, hey, we both lost the last game. No, it was a great matchup, to iconic fan bases, great brands, a great time slot on late Friday in a city that they both could get to. So that's the model we're looking at from the business perspective. Certainly, you guys kind of dissect the on-the-field stuff a little bit more than I do, but we're kind of looking for that. So the flexibility and the change 3 years ago to where we went to the pool, and we all have kind of, you're not too worried about the records as much as kind of what makes the best sense in Charlotte, Nashville, Jacksonville, Houston, you know, kind of thing, or Tampa, has really fed the industry much more better. And I think plays to advantage in Nashville because I think our geographic destination, our destination and fun factor with Music City has really kind of allowed us to showcase that.
So your role is sort of president and CEO of the Nashville Sports Council, and maybe – what is it that you can get accomplished? And I'm going to ask, I'm sure you're not going to answer, what are the sorts of conversations that the city of Nashville is having at an event like this with the SEC and with ESPN about what can take place in Nashville in the future?
It's wide, and it's general, typically, ongoing general, and then hopefully you can kind of find some opportunities. you know, as point in evidence, Greg Sankey, when he was kind of the number two guy for Commissioner Sly for those years, I mean, it took us almost 2 years to kind of get the basketball deal done. And a lot of moving parts. He had to deal with committees. He had to deal with other cities. He had to change the concept that we're going to move it around all the time. We're going to anchor it in Nashville. Why Nashville? We were kind of competing against some other cities that wanted to anchor it. So it took a while in just their governance structure. But it was something that we had talked about for a couple of years, and we get a 12-year run of it, and which is just dynamic for us. Same with the Bulls. Start thinking about knowing the CFP is coming, but not sure the exact model. Is the old draft order antiquated? Yeah, it was. But how do you change it? How do you get buy-in from everybody? How's the network like it? How can I pitch it to my sponsor? You know, we're talking about other things going forward. You know, I mean, what other events are out there that can kind of move around to fit? I mean, certainly we had a great success with the Gold Cup on MLS. Should we get a soccer-specific stadium? Can we go host the NCAA Soccer Championship? Well, who on the SEC is on that committee that makes that decision? So there's so much kind of incestuous overlap. Being here and being with the decision makers, I'm going to Charlotte, see the ACC next week, Big Ten a couple weeks. And that kind of interaction and ongoing relationship building is kind of helps you when the confidence comes up so you can bid on the NCAA Soccer Championship. Or, hey, we're hosting the NCAA Men's Golf Regionals in 2021. We're SEC is kind of part of that decision-making process. Mitch Barnhart's on the basketball committee, so hopefully that'll help us with our teams that we get, inside that room from confidence of Nashville, not necessarily being able to lobby him, but, hey, can we get somebody that can help fill up our city for right. the NCAA first and second rounds next year? So that kind of relationship building, especially in the collegiate sports, as you know, Braden, is really critical and has helped on our reputation. So I don't know if I answered your question, but you try to kind of keep everything on the table.
You're listening
like
to
the NFL draft, maybe.
Right. You're maybe. Listening to Braden and Fitz. We're talking to Scott Ramsey, president and CEO of the Nashville Sports Council. And, you know, you mentioned the Gold Cup. Braden mentions the NFL draft. One thing we were trying to sort of wrap our heads around last week in the conversation about soccer, which we had pretty substantial conversations on, was the level of interest in the city. When you're trying to prioritize the needs for the Sports Council, how do you guys gauge the level of interest and the level of need for the city?
Well, I think the best way to answer that is to rewind 20 years ago when the Titans and Predators were both emerging in the city. Two very different ways they came. Predators came from an expansion bid, similar to what we're trying to get from MLS. The Titans came on a relocation set of moves.
Similar to what we're trying to do with Tampa Bay Rays. No, I'm just kidding.
But from the Sports Council perspective, during those, certainly that was led by the mayor. In the case of MLS, led by John Ingram and his team. We're kind of that grassroots support organization as we're defined right now. But our future role will be how can we help fill up the stadium in the non-soccer specific times. So there's some emerging sports, rugby and lacrosse, and can we go get the NCAA tournaments? Can we get the SEC women's tournament? How can we maximize the use of that facility like we have with the arena and the stadium from bowl games and SEC tournaments and all-star games and those kind of things? So that's kind of been our role, if you kind of think of us as a marketing or a recruitment kind of piece, whereas the city or the ownership from each group is going to own those, we're going to work with them to try to maximize the impact for Nashville.
How much did the Predators run and sort of the epic party that the world saw around it, how much does that help your sales pitch at this point when going to other events?
Tremendously. I think you guys know that. The buzz is everything now, and the buzz is that we're even more so a can-do city that really doesn't have a lot of limits. And, I think that's good and bad to some degree, because now, it's kind of funny. It's a high-class problem is the way you describe it, but it's still a challenge a little bit in that now we've got to be very strategic in thinking about the events coming in. You mentioned the NFL draft kind of half-heartedly a little bit. It'd be a great event for us. But our challenge would be it's on the same weekend as our marathon, which has been 20 years run successfully with, 35,000 runners and, $20 or $30 million rolling into our city. Same date, same time, same infrastructure. So could we get one to shift to host the NFL draft for a one-off year and redo the marathon without damaging the marathon for a long-term run? I don't know. Probably, maybe. We haven't had those conversations. But that's where I think our city's gotten, and that's a great place to be versus just begging people to come.
Fantastic stuff, man. We appreciate the time. Scott Ramsey, again, we just keep wrestling people as they walk by, but we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming in, and congrats
on all
the success.
You guys can upgrade the rest of the day then. You got the low, you know, me out of the way. So.
Whatever.
Well, good to see you.
Thank you so much, Scott. We're going to keep – we'll keep badgering you about getting the draft here. So
we'll see you back on the home front.
when we come back, I'm Braden and Fitz. Paul Finebaum, the one and only Paul Finebaum, going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on all things SEC. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising back there doing all the work of the board. Julian Counts are doing a fantastic job. We are live at SEC Media Days. And one of the best parts about that is you get to hang out with some of the best minds and biggest names in all of college football. And this one we're excited about. First and foremost, we got to tell everybody, Pilot, Flying J, and the SEC have come to a four-year sponsorship agreement. Okay, so the SEC and ESPN are welcoming Pilot, Flying J. They're going to be the official travel center of the SEC, which is really cool because Pilot has a bunch of ties to the University of Tennessee. Jim Haslam was a graduate. Jimmy, his son, a graduate. So this is a cool moment where Pilot, Flying J, and the SEC get to partner. And as a result of this fantastic partnership, we get to hang out with Paul Finebaum. So this is a win for everybody. As a touring musician, I spent a lot of time in Pilots, so I happen to like those. And as a sports guy now, I get to hang out with Paul Finebaum.
I think you should have been the spokesperson.
Well, you know, I'm just covering all the bases.
But you know, I think if you just go back to last year, and certainly Tennessee, the people in Tennessee know this company very well. The Battle of Bristol was just an amazing. Integration of a company and college football, and they're going to continue it. And I think, listen, what we do every day and what you guys do, we communicate with college football fans who stop at convenience centers on the way to games, and we also have a lot of people on the road commercially. So I think it's a very good marriage, and I'm just thrilled that to me it's an acknowledgement of the college football fans who are also consumers.
So Paul, we communicate with college football fans all the time, you and us and Fitzy and everybody else in the media. Now Butch Jones, on the other hand, at times has had his moments communicating maybe to the fan base and maybe meshing with the fan base. What did you think of his overall general delivery, SEC Now performance, on the stage, answering questions? There are football games to be played, we understand that, but we can only talk about what took place yesterday. What were your general thoughts on his performance yesterday?
Braden, the bar is really low, so I think he exceeded it, and that's like that's like, you know, getting involved in, you know, politics. People say, well, you know, the president had a great foreign trip. A lot of people would disagree, but he did what he was supposed to do. So, and I think that's what Butch Jones did yesterday. I'm a critic like a lot of people, and there's only so much of cliches you can take as a coach. But I thought there were fewer cliches yesterday. There weren't any that just went viral, which I thought was a good day for Butch Jones. But I will say this in the end. all the champions of life talk, which, by the way, relates to his team. We may not relate to us, and everything else that people don't like about Butch Jones, all of that is irrelevant if he wins big or loses on the football field.
You're listening to Braden and Fitz. We're talking to Paul Finebaum. Let's get into that. Can, with this roster, the way it's stacked this year in the East, can Butch Jones and this Vols team win the East in your mind?
No. I really don't see it. And, you know, I've had smarter people than me analyze it. I was with Booger McFarland and Greg McElroy, two guys who are ingrained in the breaking down. I mean, listen, we're talk show hosts. I'm not going to try to say, oh, you know, I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning looking at film last night, Brad. and so, I mean, things happen. The Tennessee fan base is just – split down the middle on the orange zealots and those who don't think this program is going to work. And I mean, you look at the schedule, I see some landmines there, and none more important than the first game. You lose the first game against a team you should beat, and you're heading, yep, 12 days later to Gainesville in a game I don't think they can win. So, no, I don't see much of a path to win the SEC East. I don't think that's the requirement this year at Tennessee, but I do think avoiding going backwards should be the requirement.
And I don't think anybody disagrees with that. And I, you know, the requirement for Tennessee, maybe all these fan bases are bloodthirsty, right? Especially the top seven or eight of them, and those are teams that expect to compete for conference titles on a semi-routine basis. Should everybody in the SEC just sort of stop and say, listen, 9-3 is good enough until Nick Saban retires?
I'm not going to go on a rant here, but I think it would be wise if most people just quit worrying about Nick Saban, because if you take Saban off the board, now Saban has gotten, I think Les Miles is a casualty of Nick Saban. I don't think there's any getting around that. But if Tennessee had beaten South Carolina and Vanderbilt last year, which they should have, I don't think Nick Saban's part of the equation. I don't think you'd be John Adams would be writing columns saying Tennessee ought to drop Alabama. I mean, I just think that's a red herring. I think it's an excuse, and I get a little sick of it, quite frankly, because I think it's okay to lose to Nick Saban right now, but it's not okay to lose to Will Muschamp every year, and it's not okay to lose to Vanderbilt. And I'm not being disrespectful of Vanderbilt's program. I mean, it's a better program than it used to be. It's not as good as it was, but it's still a competitive program. But there's no excuse not only to lose, but to be plastered all over the field.
You're listening to Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game, hanging out with Paul Feinbaum. So let's look at what Vols fans should want, because there's two results here you mentioned. If they do well, Butch Jones sticks around. If they don't do well, Butch Jones is gone. If you're a Vols fan, what should you want?
Okay, I'm going to answer that question, Fitz, two ways, and I don't get a chance to do this very often. I'm going to answer as a talk show host and an alum of Tennessee. As an alum, I think Tennessee should be in the same category as Alabama and Florida. I mean, or LSU. I mean, elite programs, and it drives me crazy to hear fans accept mediocrity. As a journalist and as a sports talk show host, the answer is not dramatically different. I don't want to hear. And I had a friend of mine on yesterday who covers Tennessee, and he said, "Yeah, Butch Jones inherited a mess." Who cares? That was a lifetime ago. That was in 2012 when he took over. It was a mess. Nick Saban didn't inherit a great program either, and he's won, what, four national championships and nearly won a fifth, and probably could have won seven if you get right down to it. I mean, by your fifth year, you should be contending. You shouldn't be saying, well, we got to replace this and we got to replace that. I mean, when Josh Dobbs went there, he wasn't projected to be a four-year starter. I mean, that's the thing about Tennessee that drives me crazy, is that the bar keeps getting lowered. I think the bar should be raised.
I think there are seven programs in the SEC that have that national championship DNA, those programs. Florida, Georgia, Tennessee in the East, Auburn, LSU, Alabama in the West.
Exactly.
And the other one is Texas A&M. Texas A&M is the only one over the last 50 years or whatever that hasn't been able to achieve at that level in some time, in some frame. What is it about Texas A&M? Is there an identity crisis? Like, what is it about A&M that makes them sort of this weird, like, you don't spend $500 billion to go 8-5.
You
know what I mean?
No, I mean, every time I'm out there, I mean, I mean the facilities are better than anyone. I mean, you have to start asking, not asking, the question's already been asked, but start answering questions about Kevin Sumlin and quit trying to, I mean, just forget Johnny Manziel. That was a once-in-a-generational player. He's done nothing since Johnny Manziel. And it's the same story every year, crash and burn. He came very close to getting fired last year. I think if there had been someone out there that the program felt comfortable, don't forget, same day that his future was being determined, LSU was trying to hire Tom Herman, and Texas hired him the next day. So that could have played into it. But, I mean, you know, everyone knows what Scott Woodward said.
Yep.
And by the way, he said it, and I was sitting next to him when he said it, and I've yet to hear anyone disagree with him.
Yep.
Fantastic stuff. Follow him on Twitter, at Feinbaum. You know that. Watch him on the SEC Network. Listen to him. And congratulations again. Fantastic deal between Pilot and the SEC Network. You can follow Pilot on Twitter, at Pilot Flying J.
New extra hour on TV, too,
yeah.
Right?
Got yeah, congratulations on everything, man. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate your time.
It was my pleasure, guys.
Great
Absolutely.
Stuff from Paul Feinbaum. When we come back, Billy Liucci from Texags is going to join us. We'll continue the SEC conversation next on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Buck Rising is back in the Game, Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Braden and I down at SEC Media Days, thanks to Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and Walker Chevrolet.
I'm glad I wore a nice jacket today.
Yeah, I will say the table just got a lot more dapper. Like, to set the scene here, I'm in a polo and shorts. And that even is a stretch for me. There was a point today where I almost wear Raiders shorts and a hat backwards. Like, I've given up at this point. You know, it's radio, right?
One of us has to act professionally
here. And so Braden's got the sport coat on, and, you know, he just looks dapper, and it looks fantastic. Pocket square. And the pocket square game was strong earlier as we had some Vandy. As Oren Burks from Vanderbilt had a fantastic jacket, pocket square, and bow tie. So I thought Braden was going to be untouchable, but then Billy Liucci comes on, and Billy is.
We're comparing the insides of our jackets.
Billy is the godfather of Texas A&M football.
Billy Liucci,
the single greatest mind of Texas
A&M
football.
It's probable. I mean, would you be okay with the single greatest mind in A&M football history? Are you okay with that?
I would certainly take that.
Mike Sherman.
I would take that, and here's, you know, I'm always told I have, like, this great memory. People say, you have a great memory. I go, well, it's because with my job I really have to know one thing, A&M football. It really doesn't. Hopefully it doesn't encompass my whole, you know, my entire brain, knowing, you know, what's going on with the Aggies. But, so, yeah, I guess I'm all right at that. And one thing I'm not good at is wearing, you know, coats and suits and things. So that's why one day in life I'd like to get to the point where it's not a big deal when I wear one, but I too wanted to go with the hat and Raider shorts today.
Well, you could have.
Well, and that's
tomorrow. Just come on back.
That's true.
That's very similar to why, and I try to convince my wife of this all the time. She's like, why are you wearing a sport coat to dinner tonight? I'm like, because I never get to do it, and when I do it, I want to do it well. So
I
never get to do it.
I get hustled by there's a former Dallas Cowboy cheerleader at this trunk club up in
That's where
in
every
Dallas.
Story starts with Lucci.
And, yeah, well, no. Well, this one ends with me just buying a lot of clothes. And
so you're telling me you're married? Because that's what
it
sounds like my life.
No, so I buy these coats and I don't wear them ever.
Right.
And I have a really strong coat and suit game, but I just never wear them because my job doesn't require it, and I have a closet full of them. So that's why this girl is an outstanding salesperson.
Well, you brought your A game. So let's talk about the A game for Texas A&M. The question is, everything goes right for A&M. Let's just say it's one of those years where all the pieces click.
Okay.
Where do they finish in the West?
If everything clicked, looking at the other teams in the West, the best case scenario you're talking about, I would say, let's say one of Auburn or LSU aren't as good as they're being talked about being, which I think is possible when you look at both those teams' recent history. And if everything clicked for A&M, I think they could be the third team in the West. It may be a 5-3 SEC record, which, you know, would not certainly, if they're good enough to go 5-3, they'd probably be good enough to knock off UCLA. I think best case scenario for this team would be a 9-3 type of season, and that's tough. I mean, you asked me best case.
Is the fan base happy with that?
Yes, but ask me if they're happy with 8-4 again, and I think that answer changes significantly. I don't think Kevin Sumlin. I don't think Scott Woodward is sitting there with a direct record that A&M. Kevin Sumlin has to win this many games, or we're making a change. And I know that's what people thought coming out of SEC meetings with what he said on Feinbaum. I don't think that's the case, but I think I am comfortable in saying that there's no way in my mind they'd make a change at 9-3. And 8-4, I think, is where it gets to where, you know, that you have to kind of evaluate how that happened. You know, was it a fast start and a crater down the stretch? Do you have a young quarterback that's really coming on and looks like a future star? Is that recruiting class still sitting in the top 10? What were your wins? Did you win a big home game? Did you avoid getting embarrassed at home like what happened on Thanksgiving or what happened, you know, the year before against a bad Auburn team? So all those things, I think, would factor in at 8-4.
And I think what makes that interesting is someone has a better record than the previous two coaches before him, Mike Sherman and Dennis Franchione. He certainly has he's got the only double-digit. In a tougher league, he's got the only double-digit win season. Now, I know that's Johnny Manziel, but the only double-digit win season, I think, since 2001. They haven't had a conference title since 98. They had that run of 6-8 years back in the 90s. But Texas A&M has national championship DNA. It's got one of the seven programs in the SEC that I put on that plateau that has national title components and advantages. And you don't spend $485 million, half a billion dollars, to go 8-5. So yeah. How do you mesh the expectations with a track record that has never really shown that they could sort of accomplish that? And
yeah.
Maybe why is that? What's the identity crisis there?
I think a lot of it, first of all, is you're right, because there's been some great years at A&M. There's even more so than that, there have been some great players over the years. There's been some, you know, in the 80s and 90s, some incredible defense. There hasn't been sustained excellence. There hasn't been any stretch of consistent national title contention. And a lot of people refer to A&M for a long time as a sleeping giant. Some would say that means underachieving as a program. Right. But I think until recently, you mentioned that stadium. And it's the stadium. It's joining that league. It's getting out from the Texas Longhorn shadow that they cast in that state, even though they haven't been good since 2009 or 10 at this point. All those things. And then there's a commitment at Texas A&M now. I think the stadium's the best point. There's the commitment financially in terms of facilities, in terms of supporting the coach. You know, Kevin Sumlin wanted analysts. Well, they gave him the ability to go out and hire some analysts. Now he's got a director of player personnel. He had to go out and get a defensive coordinator. They let him pay $1.8 million to get John Chavis. They let him pay almost $1 million a year to get Noel Mazzone. You're talking about almost $3 million in coordinators. All of those things have not been the case right. at A&M. They really haven't until the last, let's just say, 7-8 years. So now is where I think where Texas A&M, from a facility standpoint, from their ability to go out and hire not only assistants, but if they did have to make a change, I think you'd see A&M go out and make a $7+ million a year hire. I don't think on that one, actually. I'm one that doesn't think that one would happen. I know it just looks too obvious. I don't know that it's a fit, and I don't know he and Woodward's relationship dating back to their days in the Pac-12. But all of those things kind of came together. When it comes to keeping your coach from going to USC 4 years ago with Kevin Sumlin, they set the standard by paying him $5 million. Now $5 million is normal.
But the question is for what? And I'm not trying to be cynical, yeah. but I think this is the beast that every SEC West team is in right now. Spend all this money on facilities.
Like the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, for what? What's the end goal if you're an A&M fan? Is it really like you hope that you get good enough that you can get one of those years where Alabama trips up?
Well, I think two things. I think, first of all, you got to position yourself like everyone's probably, no one will say this, but you're positioning yourself for when Nick Saban's not coaching at Alabama anymore. And everyone's trying to raise the bar and get there. But like you said, realistically, no one's going to go out and, you know, the Rockets can go get Chris Paul, and they're my team, and they can go get Carmelo Anthony. They're not going to beat Golden State in a 7-game series unless Durant or Curry get hurt. But if you're the second-best team in the NBA, that makes for a hell of a season, and your fans are happy. And so
this is what Nick Saban has done to us.
In college football, though, if you're the second-best team in the SEC West, you got a real shot to reach that college football playoff. And I think that's kind of what
point.
You do.
That's a fair point.
Think about A&M.
11-1, your only loss is to Bama. Do you sneak into the playoff? That's
well, yeah. think about A&M last year. How crazy is this? And this is why I tell people, in 6 years at the helm and counting this year, if things don't work out for Kevin Sumlin, you can go back and look at an 8-day stretch against a 5-7 Ole Miss team and a 5-7 Mississippi State team that combined were 4-7, or they were 8-14 in games not played against A&M in the regular season. Had the Aggies won those two games, they're 10-2 and probably ranked second or third in the playoff. They were fourth when they lost to Mississippi State. Going into the last game against a 4-loss LSU team that did hammer them. But my point is, A&M lost that Mississippi State game without Trevor Knight and came back, and they were a blown 15-point lead away from playing their final game of the regular season at home on Thanksgiving for a berth in the playoff. Remember that day was when all that carnage took place, yep. and the Aggies were sitting at about eighth. They were a win in their season finale away from reach. So I think that's the deal.
They've been in the AP top 10 every year for 6 years.
And to your point, the difference between the NBA and college football inherently is that you don't have to beat Bama in a 7-game series. You just got to beat Bama once.
Yeah.
I mean, so once you're in the playoff, it keeps you alive. Maybe that
or even have Ohio State beat them before you have to play.
Anybody can take them out. That's good.
I think that's the conversation that I like the most. And we're out of time here, so we got to let you go. But I love the how many teams can make the playoff? Maybe 20, 25. How many teams can win the playoff?
Yeah.
Maybe like 3.
Yeah.
And that's about it. So, yeah. Luch, always a pleasure, man. Really
all
appreciate
right, love it.
Follow
appreciate
him on
you
Twitter.
You look good.
At Billy Liucci. Yeah, you want to see that. You want to follow him just to see the sport coats because, let me tell you, they are the best dressed. 3D's coming up next. I don't know what 3D's going to be doing today. I'd like to think that, you know, they'll try to do better, but I'm not sure. If you missed it, go get the app, The Game Nashville, because we had Derek Mason, Oren Burks, and Ralph Webb from Vandy. Obviously, Paul Feinbaum. It was a huge day.
We're not slowing down tomorrow either, by the way.
It continues tomorrow. I'm going to get straight into should the playoffs expand, but I'm going to do it with the guy that actually has a say in if the playoffs should expand. So we'll have that conversation tomorrow with Bill Hinecock.
Yeah, I bet he's never got that question before.
Yeah, no, probably not. But he's never, you know, I'm still going to drill
him on
it.
I think I asked him that last year, actually.
And still going to drill him on it. We'll do that tomorrow. Again, thanks for listening to Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council, Kevin Kyle, Buck Rising, Bearded Intern. It takes a village to make this happen. We appreciate all you guys listening. Do it again tomorrow.